Okay, we're going to start here from the Gemara on the bottom of Mem Amud Bet. In the Mishnah, it describes a procession, which is also described in Mishnayot in Yoma, whereby the Shamash in the Mikdash gives the Torah to the Gabai. The Gabai gives it to the Skan HaKohen, and then the Skan gives it to the Kohen Gadol. And from this, the Gemara wants to conclude, Shma Mino, Chukim Kavod Tamid B'Makom Arav. That you give kavod to the Tamid, even though you're in the presence of the Rav. Because over here, we have the Shamasha Knesset, giving it to the Gabaya Knesset, in order to give it to the Skan. Which means that they're giving kavod to the Skan, by having it pass from the Shamash to the Gabai to the Skan. Yet, the Skan is in the presence of the Kohen Gadol himself. So that's what the Gemara wants to conclude from here, that it is permissible to give kavod to someone of a lower stature, even in front of someone of a higher stature or their Rebbe. So when it says, "Am Rabbi Kula Mishum Kavodo de Kohen Gadol," who? That this procession is all for the kavod of Kohen Gadol. It's not because we are giving kavod to the Skan, that we go from the Shamash to the Gabai to the Skan and then to the Kohen Gadol. It's all part of this giving kavod to the Kohen Gadol himself. And therefore, it's not for the Skan's, the purpose of the Skan's kavod, but rather for the Kohen Gadol's kavod entirely. And therefore, we can't conclude from this that Chokim kavod to Talmid, because over here, it's different. Here, when you're giving the kavod to Talmid, it's in the process of giving kavod to the Kohen Gadol, and that's the whole purpose here. For Kohen Gadol omeid umekabel vikore, omeid demichlad yoshevu. When he stands up to receive the Torah, implies that he was sitting until that point. V'amamar. Don't we have a memra that in yeshiva bazara el machhe bit David bilvad? There's no sitting in the azara except, or with the exception of the kings of Beit David, Shinemar. Vayavo melech David vayeshev lifnei Hashem vayomer mi anochi. So David sat lifnei Hashem, but that's the only exception to the rule. Otherwise, you're not allowed to sit in the azara. It's inappropriate to sit in the azara because of the presence of the Shekhinah. One has to be standing in the presence of the Shekhinah. Kedama Rav Chista Bezrat Nashim. As Rav Chista already explained, that was in the Ezrat Nashim. Achanami Bezrat Nashim. So to over here, the Ezrat Nashim is a large Tosfot over here who says, Lo Yadati Mikomo. Because I don't know where the Ein Yeshiva, the Bezrat Lemechu Beit David, I don't know where the original source is. The Gemara quotes Vamamar, it's quoting from the source somewhere else. So Tosfot says, I know it's quoted in Tamid, I know it's quoted in Kiddushin, I know it's quoted in Sanhedrin, I know it's quoted in Yoma, but where is the actual location where the sugya itself or where the source is? So Tosfot brings two possibilities, one from his Rav Rabbi Meir Bar Kolonimus, Reni Mekomo B'Tosefta B'Sanhedrin. That's in a Tosefta in Sanhedrin, and that is the original placement of this Gemara. He brings an alternative opinion that is in the Agadot of Achelek in Sanhedrin. He favors this opinion that it's in Tosefta because he says the Yerushalmi also seems to quote it from Tani de Rabbi Chia, a Braita of Rabbi Chia that is indicative of the fact that it was found in a Tosefta. So he favors that explanation. So Rav Chista explains that we were talking about Ezrat Nashim. Also over here, we're talking about the Ezrat Nashim. And the Ezrat Nashim doesn't have the full status of the Azara. Since it doesn't have the full status of the Azara, then the Kohen could be sitting there until he receives the Torah. Meitave. So here, the question of whether Meitave is an appropriate header here, you can see in the Aleph that the Agot Ronchenberg says that Meitave is incorrect, and the word here should be Titanio, that there is a Breita. Because the next statement seems supportive of the conclusion that we read here, rather than a question on what we had said before. It says, Ve'echen korinbo. Where do you read it? Bazara. Belezer ben Yaakov omer b'harabayit. Shenemar. Ve'ikra bo lifnei rechov v'shed lifnei shar hamayim. By Ezra, when he's reading the Torah, he says he's reading on the road that's right before the shar hamayim, which is indicative that it's outside, not inside. So Amar Rav Chista, Bezrat Nashim. So here's the original statement of Rav Chista that it was in the Ezrat Nashim. So it means, yes, Michutz Lazara. He was outside the Azara, but he was still in the Ezrat Nashim. And over here as well, it was in the Ezrat Nashim where they did it. So the location is not all the way in the Azara, because there you'd have to be standing, and here we see the Kohen Gadol sitting. It's not outside of the Mikdash entirely, but rather in the Ezrat Nashim, which has this in-between status, similar to Har HaBayit, right? But it's not full level of the Azara.
So if the focus here is on the Braita itself, then there's a question, because the Braita says Azara, and you just explained it's not Nashim, and that's where Rav Chisda comes to solve the problem. On the other hand, if the focus is on the solution of Rav Chisda to the problem in the Braita, then this Braita is really supportive of what we said before, and actually a much more natural flow from the Gemara, because Gemara brought the proof from Rav Chisda's statement here to over to our case, and therefore it doesn't make sense to ask the question from a Braita that is the original source for Rav Chisda's statement. In addition, Rashi over here assumes that this Braita is speaking about the Kriya of the Kohen Gadol, but that's not at all clear, because this Braita's source is out of the Sefta of Sota, where it's speaking about Hakhel, and therefore the question is even more perplexing. Why are they bringing a question from Hakel to the Kriya of the Kohen Gadol? And number two is, why are they bringing a proof from the Pasuk in Ezra, which is talking about in Rosh Hashanah, when Ezra was reading there? So you have to say something along the lines of that these types of public readings, the Gemara views in a single brush, the public reading of Ezra on Rosh Hashanah was equivalent to like a Hakel that would have taken place normally on Sukkot. And the reading of the Kohen Gadol has similarities or parallels to that type of public reading. And that's why the Gemara is willing to entertain this Braita as being relevant to our sugya over here.
So the Kohen Gadol, when he reads the Torah, reads from Achrei Mot, not the entire Achrei Mot, just the beginning portion of Achrei Mot, which speaks about the Avoda of Yom HaKippurim. That's the Kriyat Torah that we do on Yom HaKippurim. And then Ach Be'asur, which is found in Parshat Emor, in the Parshat HaMoadot, he's reading both of these. Viraminu, midalgim b'navi, ve'en midalgim b'torah. You're allowed to move around in the Navi, but you're not allowed to move around in the Torah. So how is it here that we allow the Kohen Gadol, when he's reading the Torah, to skip from Achrei Mot to Emor? All has to do with the amount of time it takes you to move from one location to the other. We know, with regards to the Torah, that they were mitargim pasuk pasuk. Every pasuk that was read in Hebrew was then translated into Aramaic. So in the time period in which they're doing the translation of the Targum, if you can roll the Sefer in that period of time, then that's fine. If you can't roll it in that period of time, then it doesn't work. You're not allowed to do it. Vaha alaktani. Wait a minute. Is that really a solution to the problem? The way we're solving the problem is saying that our Mishnah is a case where he was able to roll it before the Targum was over. For the Targum, the last Pasuk in Achrei Mot that he reads, he was able to roll it over to Emor, and that's fine. Implying that the Braita is a case where he didn't have sufficient time to roll it, and that's why the Braita says you can't skip in the Torah. Mar says, isn't that Braita qualified by Midalgim bin Avi, Vein Midalgim bin Torah, Vad Kama Midalgim? How far can you skip? Akadesh Lev Soka Turgaman. The amount of time it takes for the Turgaman to finish. Michlau, from that you would conclude the Bitarah Klalu Klalo, that in Torah you can't skip at all. I mean, in that statement of Midalgim b'Navi, Vein Midalgim b'Torah, over there we qualify that by saying, well, how much are you allowed to skip? Well, the only thing where it says there you're allowed to skip is the Navi. And in the Navi, you're allowed to skip the amount of time it takes for the Targum to be finished. That implies that in the Torah, you don't skip even within the period of time of the Targum. Where it says, Amar Bai Lokasha, kan b'inyan echad, kan b'shnei inyanim. Depends if you're in one topic or in two topics. And then we have Atanya. Atanya here is b'nichuta, and this is a supportive of this explanation, which is, midogim b'torah b'inyan echad. You're allowed to skip in the Torah, you're allowed to move from parsha to parsha as long as it's on the same topic, the same subject. U'b'navi b'shnei inyanim. In the Navi, you can even switch topics. V'kan v'kan. In cases where we allow you to skip, b'chdesh lo yifsol ha-turgaman, it's only in the amount of time to finish up the Targum. Now in Navi, that gives you more time, because in the Navi, they used to do the Targum as three psukim. So they read three psukim, they were mitargim three psukim. So that gives you the amount of time of translating three psukim to move around, which is obviously a larger span of time. In the Torah, they were doing pasuk pasuk, so you had a smaller amount of time. But in the Navi, you don't skip from Navi to Vi. Unavi shol 12 midagim. Inside of 12, you're allowed to go. So you're not allowed to move from Yirmiyahu to Yeshayahu, Yeshayahu to Chezkel. You can't move around from Navi to Navi. On the other hand, in the 12, basically it's considered to be a single unit. Even though there are 12 different Nevi'im there, as far as this is concerned, it's concerned to be a single entity. and therefore you can move around. Ubavad, shali daleg misof sefer letchilato. You have to go in order. If you're going to skip within the Shreyasar, you have to go in order of the Nevi'im there, Hosea, Amos. You have to move in that direction, not go to a later Navi and then come back. So go to Ovadia and then come back to Hosea. That you can't do. I would assume that Shmuel Av, Shmuel Bet, Malachim Aleph, Malachim Bet, which are later divisions, are not divisions for this, that you could skip around. And there, even though, again, the way that we read the Haftarot today, we don't really run into that problem so much, except for maybe Shabbat Shuvah. They read from different pieces of the Tri'asar. Rashi over here, it's very interesting, Rashi, because Rashi takes time to explain why is it that there's a difference between Torah and Navi. And so Rashi says it's a fundamental difference, because he says, first of all, Shein Aleiv, Shehu Nimshach Achar Inyan Echad, Memeher Letzeit Mimenu, Lishmo Alavin Divrei Inyan Acher. Rashi says that when a person is in a single topic, when you switch topics on them, they don't transition so fast. This is before the age of ADD and ADHD, where people talk about the difficulty with transitioning from one task to another task and from one topic to another topic. Over here, Rashi describes this issue, which is that if you have people engaged in a certain topic, to have them slide over to the other topic, it doesn't happen so quickly for them. It's not an easy transition. So that's why Rashi says you can't switch topics in the middle, because the people won't make the transition with you when you switch topics. That's number one. So then number two is, why is there a difference between Torah and Navi then? If it's switching topics, what's the problem? He goes, Hilkach Torah, she mitzvot tluyot ba. The guards of the Torah, where the mitzvot are all based on the Torah, umeshmino to the tzibur, pasach achad, shelo yavim bahu shokucho vover alav, missing of one pasuk, is hugely detrimental to the people, because then they won't know the halachot and they won't keep them. Veinu mekaymo u'bachur valkach. Now lead to a terrible thing. The kach ein midalgim inyan liinyan. In the Torah, you don't skip topics. Vafilu ein adurgman mafsik. Even if the turgman is not going to finish, aval benavi shapir dami. But in the navi, it's okay, because in the navi, as Rashi says, that the robe of the navi is inyan tochechot, inyan tochecha. So, if you lose a person for a second, or you lose them by one pasuk, it's not going to be the end of the world. And therefore, you have these different practices by Navi and Torah. By Navi, you can switch inyanim. Navi, you can skip around, as long as the Torah is still going. But again, you're also mitargeim in Navi, three psukim at a time. Because it's not so essential to get every pasuk, but just get the general gist of what is being said. Versus in the Torah, where we want you to know every single pasuk, they're mitargeim pasuk by pasuk. That's the explanation for the difference between Torah and Navi, and why you can, first of all, change topics in Navi, why we're mitargeim more pasukim in Navi, why there's a difference in, by Torah, we're much more makpid to keep it on topic, to keep it only one pasuk at a time, is for this difference in the content. Torah is the core of the mitzvot, and we don't want that to be lost on the people. Whereas the Navi or Divrei Tochachot, we're trying to get a general message across. It's not about every word or every particular mitzvah that's there, because the mitzvot is not an inyan of mitzvot there, it's an inyan of tochacha, musar. Right now, the Gemara says, "V'golel et haTorah menicha b'cheko." He rolls the Torah and then holds it by his chest. V'kol kach lama. Why does he have to do this whole show? Where he says, look, he read Achrimot, he read it more, then he picks up the Torah, rolls it, holds it in his arms and says, you know what? There's more than what's written over here found in this Torah. Why does he have to give this whole speech? Shalolo tzilaz al sefer Torah. In order that there's no aspersions cast about the sefer Torah, as Rashi says over here, shalom yamru parshashu korei al peh einak tuva bo, v'sefer mishubashu. Not to say that the reason he's reading it by heart now is because the Chumash Pekudim, Parshat Pinchas, which has the section about the korbanot of Yom HaKippurim in it, that is not found in this Sefer Torah. It's missing. And therefore, he makes it clear that this Sefer Torah contains it. He's just not reading it because Yeter Mashiach Karati Po, because of the Kavod Tzibur, he goes on to read it Baal Peh, but not because it's missing from the Sefer. Obviously, it could be a problem from a different perspective, not about this Sefer Torah in particular, but in general. That if he does this, they'll say, oh, that's not found in the Torah, even though it is found in the Torah. So there's reason to make sure that everybody understands what he's doing now. He reads it by heart. Why don't you just roll the Sefer Torah to that section in Pinchas? We did Achimot and Emor, which are close by, close to each other, and that's why you can roll. And the amount of time it takes for the Metargim to finish the last Pasuk that he read in Achimot, you can easily roll it over to Emor, Achimot Kedoshim, and then you have Emor. So it's very easy to get there and to be within the time period that you need to be. And again, it's a single topic. They're both about Yom HaKippurim. So why don't we do the same thing here from Emor to Pinchas? This is the problem. We don't allow you to roll in the Tzibur because it's a lack of Kavod HaTzibur to have everybody just sitting there silently while you're rolling the Torah. And in this instance, the Mitargim is going to finish that Pasuk in Emor, and you're going to have to get all the way from Emor to Pinchas in that time. You don't have sufficient time to roll Pinchas at the end of Sefer Bamidbar. Emor is, you know, middle to end of Sefer Vayikra. It's going to take you a long time to get there. So therefore, it's inappropriate to do this in front of the Tzibur. So Velete Sefer Torah Achrina Velikre. Let him bring out another Torah and read it from another Torah, like we do. Bring out two Sifrei Torah. Huna Rav Yehuda Amar Mishum Gamo Shel Rishon. Because it would then again cast dispersions on the first Torah to say the reason they have to go to the second Torah is because it's not in the first Torah. It's not, there's something wrong with this first Sefer Torah. They found a ta'ut, they found a mistake in it. We don't want to do that because it's going to force a bracha she'ena tzricha. Come back and speak about this in a second. Since when do we worry about this issue of casting aspersions on another Sefer Torah by bringing out the second Sefer Torah? This is going to have happened this Shabbos. Rosh Chodesh Tevet Shechaliot B'Shabbat. Exactly what we have here. Rosh Chodesh Tevet, which is always Chanukah, is on Shabbat. You bring out three Sifrei Torah. Mevi Shlosh Torot. Korachat Minyano Shel Yom. You read one from the regular Parshat Shavua, Parshat Miketz. Then you read Vachat Shel Rosh Chodesh. And then Shvi'i, you read from Parshat Pinchas, the Parshat HaKorbanot. And then Vachat B'Shel Chanukah. And then you read from Parshat Naso for Chanukah. Three different Kriot and from three different Sfarim. Tzlata Gavre, B'Tzlata Sifrei Leka Pigama. If you, each one of the Torot has a different Aliyah associated with it, you call up someone else, then there's no question of Pigam. You're switching Torot, but you're also switching individuals who are getting the Aliyah. And in doing so, it does not cast aspersions on the other Torah because you're bringing up somebody new. Bring up somebody new and a new topic, so new Sefer is fine. Chad Gavra betray Sifrei Ika Begama. In the case where it's one individual and two Sfarim, then it looks like a Begam. And over here, it's the Kohen Gadol who's reading from both sections. It's a quote-unquote single Aliyah. And if it's a single Aliyah and you switch Torot in the middle, that makes you wonder about why you didn't use the previous Sefer and you're using a new Sefer. That would cause problems for the first Sefer. So that's as far as why they didn't do this in the case of Yom HaKippurim. Whereas by our cases where we have to read from multiple sections and we can't roll there, we bring out a different Sefer. That's what happens anytime we have a Maftir that is not from the Inyona of the Yom, then we bring out a second Sefer Torah in order not to have to roll that Torah. The only interesting question is, why don't we do it by the case, maybe of Parshat Shkalim, where sometimes the Kriya is also matched up, meaning that it could be in Truma Tetzaveh, or Vayakal Pekudeh, and you could be reading Kitisa, which is right there, you could probably roll the Sefer there without any problem, without making notes, but we, lo plug, we bring out a different Sefer anytime we read from a different Parshiah. They couldn't do that here, because it's the Kohen Gadol who's doing it. The issue that comes up, well, just raise it. I'm not going to go into all the details of it here. Two questions that come up here. What happens when you only have one Sefer Torah and you don't have multiple Sefarim? There, it's clear in Halacha that you roll. When you have to do this, you do roll there. The Poskei Halacha say you should try not to do it in front of the Tzibur. Again, because it's not a Kavod HaTzibur. On the other hand, it's difficult to do that because when you have the Sefer out, if you're going to take it out and bring it back in, it probably causes more of a delay. So what ends up happening is they roll it and move it to that parsha because otherwise you're not going to end up laning. That's what the poskim say. Very good. What David's suggesting, which is kvod haTorah is odif mi kvod haTzibur. So where we have an alternative, which is to bring out multiple sifrei Torah, fine. In a case where you don't have that, then in order to accomplish the kriyat haTorah and the kvod haTorah, then the tzibur is mochel on their kavod because otherwise you won't be able to read from the parsha that you need to read, and that's why we roll it in that instance to the places that they need. In addition, second thing to note here is the Rav Shimon Lakish. Rav Shimon Lakish raises the issue here with regards to Yom HaKippurim, says the problem with bringing out a second Sefer Torah is it generates a bracha sheina tzricha, implying that if you brought out another Torah, you would have to make a new bracha, because that's what his problem is. You have to make a new bracha, and it's a bracha sheina tzricha, it's not necessary. From this develops the huge pumus about what happens when you have a Sefer Torah that you find a psul in it. You find a mistake. Someone came up for an aliyah, and in coming up for an aliyah, after they've read a number of psukim, they find that there's a problem in the Sefer. You're going to bring out a different Sefer to replace this. How do you deal with the aliyah at hand? Does the person who has the aliyah ready make a bracha and finish off what they did, and then you start a new bracha when you bring out the new Sefer Torah? That seems to be implied here, that Rav Shimon Lakish says if you bring out a new Sefer Torah, you need to make a new bracha. So if that's the case, you would force the person who is aliyah now to make a bracha to finish off his aliyah, and then you'd start a new aliyah with a new Sefer. If you look in the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch, basically that is the nature of their psak. They discuss there how many psukim you have read b'kashrut before you found the psul, and then you make a bracha, finish that off, and then you bring out the new Sefer and start with a new aliyah. The obvious problem with that is that the person who has the aliyah is making a bracha on a Sefer Torah that is pasul. So now he's finishing off his aliyah with a bracha that is Sefer Torah pasul. From that derives our general practice, which is the individual who has the aliyah does not make a bracha. We bring out the other Sefer and continue to read in that Sefer until we finish off the aliyah that he has. And then he makes a bracha afterwards. So we continue the aliyah, assuming that the person who gets the aliyah doesn't speak. It's a big issue, which is that he is restricted from speaking. Because if he speaks during that period of time, he's mafsik within his aliyah. And then he would have to make a bracha to finish off the aliyah and start a new aliyah. So as long as he remains silent, it's not the Baal Kore, but the person who got the aliyah has to remain silent. That's our practice. A lot of this issue revolves around this statement of Reish Lakish, because he, first of all, he says you have to make a bracha when you have a new Sefer Torah, and he calls it a bracha sheina tzricha. So the question is, how do you deal with that? If it forces a bracha, then if you're taking out a new Sefer, it seems it's forcing it. But then he calls it a bracha sheina tzricha, that it's unnecessary to make this bracha. So in dealing with that, this is a pivotal point in deciding how the halacha should be when you find a psul in a Sefer Torah and you have to bring out a second Sefer. Part of the discussion is about what does it mean if you have a psul in a Sefer Torah. Because just because something's pasul, does it posel the whole Torah? Shulchan Aruch has an interesting shita there, that each one of the chumashim is separate. So if you find a psul in one chumash, you can read from another chumash. So it's not completely pasul. And the fact that he read three, it's interesting discussion. Because we think of it as a psul in a Sefer Torah, the whole thing's gone. Over there, they say if you read three psukim before you find the psul, it's as if you read five more kosher Sefer. Part of that issue, and that's what they says mimonav shach. If you think that a psul makes the whole Torah pasul, you should have to go back and read the whole sedra. If you think it doesn't make it, then you should have to read anything. You shouldn't have to go back and read anything. So there's this balance. All the Rishonim are dealing with. Some say you have to go back and read the whole thing. Others say not. Again, I didn't want to go too deep into the topic, but what you're raising is exactly the issues that they are dealing with. And then the Kohen Gadol makes Shmoneh Brachot. Tanav Rabbanan, Mivrachim ala Torah. Kederach shemivrachim beveit haKnesset. Ala Torah is similar to the way that they do it in shul. Means birkata Torah. V'ala vuda'a, v'ala ha'uda'a. V'al mechilat avon kitiknan. Avoda and ha'uda'a. And then mechilat avon, we have paradigms of that type of bracha in Shmoneh Esrei. So that we know what he's going to say. The way that the Chachamim established the brachot that we have in Shmoneh Esrei, that are the standard by which we have these types of brachot. Al Mikdash bifnei atzmo, on the Mikdash by itself, there's a separate bracha for the Mikdash. Vel Kohanim bifnei atzman, and a bracha for the Kohanim. Al Yisrael bifnei atzman, and then on Klal Yisrael as a whole. Vel Yushalayim bifnei atzma, and then on Yushalayim by itself. So you have all these brachot, and then the Mishnah says Vashar Tfilah, and the remainder is Tfilah. So the Mara wants to know, what is that Vashar Tfilah? Tanur Rabbanan, Vashar Tfilah, Tchina, Rina, Ubakasha, Sha'amcha Yisrael Tzrichim Li Vasha. Like it sounds, a shar tefillah means it captures everything. It's a broad capture, which is shomea tefillah, which is the capture of everything that we said. Hashem, please listen to our tefillot. So now the way that it's laid out here, the way Rashi reads it, is that it says here, Tchina, that we beseech Hashem, Rina, that we sing to Hashem, Ubakasha, and we request to Hashem, Sham Chesel Tzrichim Livasha, the Bnei Yisrael need salvation, V'chutem, and then he finishes off, Shomei Tfilah. So if you look in Rashi, that is the Nusach HaBrocha, according to Rashi. Rashi says that what we just read now, that is the Brocha. You could read it, and this is seemingly the way that the Rambam reads it, is that the Gemara is giving you topics that you have to hit. You need to do Tchina, Rina, and Bakasha. It doesn't tell you what the Tchina, Rina, and Bakasha are, but rather it's just giving you, you must do this, similar to the way the Gemara Brachot says, that the structure of a Shmon Esrei is, it's Shevach, Bakasha, and Hoda'ah. It's not telling you to say the word Shevach, Bakasha, and Hoda'ah. It's telling you you need to have topically, you need to have Shevach, then Bakasha, then Hoda'ah. So the Rambam reads this the same way. You need here Tchina, Rina, and Bakasha. These are topics that you need to do. Rashi, on the other hand, says this is the Nusach of the Brocha, which is Tchina, Rina, Bakasha, Sham Cha Yisrael. That you're using these verbs to describe what you are asking Hashem for. From that point forward, everyone brings their own Sefer Torah from their houses. And they read them. Why do we have all this pomp and circumstance surrounding it? To show off its beauty or its uniqueness to the public. That's what the Rashi says over here. To show off the Sifrei Torah and its beauty. And he says, from Zekeli Van Veyu. It's a way for people to show off their Sefer Torah, but it's showing off in a positive way. Showing off meaning that people are doing mitzvot, behidur mitzvah, and that's they bring out these beautiful Sifrei Torah, and they read from the Sifrei Torah, and it shows how they are machshiv, the Sefer Torah. The obvious problem is, it's Yom Kippur, and on Yom Kippur you're not allowed to carry. So how is it that everybody runs home to bring their Sefer Torah back to the Mikdash? If you're not allowed to carry on Yom HaKippurim. So Rashi over here tells us that the Gemara in Yoma, which asks the question, says that this is either according to the one who says, Ein Eruv Votzal Yom HaKippurim, it's a machloket as to whether you're allowed to carry or not carry on Yom HaKippurim. This is according to the Shita that you're allowed to carry on Yom HaKippurim. Or it's according to the Shita that Yerushalayim is considered to be a city in which you can make an Eruv because they close the gates at night. And since they close the gates at night, you can make an Eruv within the city of Yerushalayim, and that's exactly what they have. They created an Eruv Chatzerot within Yerushalayim, and that allowed them to carry their Sifrei Torah from their houses to the Mikdash. Next Mishnah, Parshat HaMelech Keitzad. So once again, the Mishnah tells us that Parshat HaMelech has to be Lashon HaKodesh, and now the Mishnah says Keitzad is not coming to tell you, ask the question of how do you know it's the Lashon HaKodesh, but rather, Keitzad, what is this Parshat HaMelech? What is the ceremony surrounding this? So Mishnah says, Motzei Yom Tov Rishon Shel Chag, after the first day of Yom Tov on Sukkot, Bashmini, B'motzei Shvi'it, on the 8th, on the year post-Shmi'it, which is what we're in now, we're in the Motzei Shvi'it, Gemara later will ask, Bashmini, what do you mean Bashmini? You just said it's on Motzei Yom Tov Rishon, then how is it on the 8th day? So the question of Shmini, the Gemara will say, is Shminit, not Shmini, but the 8th year. And that's what we had here. There's a year post-Shmi'itah, on Sukkot, on Motzei Yom Tov HaRishon, this is when it happened. Osimla b'mashal eitz bazara. They made a platform out of wood in the Azara. Behu yoshev ala. And the king sits on it. Shinemar, mikeitz sheva shanim b'moed. So it says after 7 years, at the end of 7 years, on the moed, the Gemara will darshin as to why you need all of these descriptors as to when it takes place. So now, the Mishnah here describes a similar procession as to what happened in Yom HaKippurim. Chazana Knesset notel Sefer Torah. The Shamash takes the Sefer Torah. Notna the Rosh Knesset gives it to the Gabbai. Rosh Knesset notna the Sgan. He gives it to the backup Kohen Gadol. Sgan notna the Kohen Gadol. And then the backup gives it to the Kohen Gadol. Kohen Gadol notna the Melech. And then the Kohen Gadol gives it to the king. So in this procession, it's the same thing. It just doesn't end with the Kohen Gadol. It ends up with the king. Vamelech omeid umikabel. Vikorei Yosef. The king accepts the Torah standing up, and then he reads it sitting down. Agrippa Samelech Amad Vikibel. Agrippa Samelech stood up to receive the Torah, Vikara Omeid, and he read it standing up. Vishabchu Chachamim. And the Chachamim praised him for this Because even though he was allowed to sit down, nevertheless, he, out of respect for the Torah and consideration of Torah, stood up, and for that the Chachamim praised him. Ufshigia. Now we're going to see later on what they read for this Hakel. But one of the things they read in Hakel is Parshat HaMelech, which is the description in the Dvarim about the appointing of a king over you. And then it says there, Lo tuchal latet alecha ish nachri. It says that you cannot appoint upon yourself someone who is a foreigner. And he has to be Jewish born, otherwise he's not allowed to be the king. Zalguin of Dmaot. He began to cry. Amru lo, al titire Agrippus. Don't worry about it, Agrippus. Achinuata. Achinuata, you are our brother. Well, Gemara will discuss what exactly transpired over here, and then we'll get to a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot, exactly what the issue was. Now, what do you read for Hakel? So now there are two things that are going on in the Mishnah. The first thing that's going on in the Mishnah is that the king is the one who reads for Hakel. It's not clear how we know that the king has to read for Hakel, because it's never mentioned. The Torah never mentions with regards to Hakel that it is the king that reads it. You could argue Mishneh Torah, meaning that because the terminology that's used by Parshat HaMelech, which says that he has a Mishneh Torah, and by Hakel, they read basically Mishneh Torah, maybe there's some correlation or connection between them, and so because of that, it's the king that is reading the Torah. The other possibility is, well, who else would read the Torah besides the king? There's nobody higher in authority than the king. Other possibility is that the mitzvah of Hakel is given in the transition of the authority from Moshe to Yoshua, and since it's written in that context, it shows you that Yoshua was the one being commanded to do the Hakel. And the last possibility is that, say, Din Derabbanan. Derabbanan said that the king should read Parshat Hakel, and not that that is necessarily the mitzvah min ha-Torah, to read, for the king reads the Hakel. So now, B'kori mitzchila, what do you read, with regards to Hakel? So this is what the Gemara says. B'kori mitzchila te'elu dvarim ad shema. You read from the beginning of Sefer Dvarim until Shema in Parshat Etchanan, Shema, and you read Shema itself in Parshat Etchanan. Then you skip to Parshat Ekev and read Vayah im Shamoa. The reason being that Shema is the beginning of a section of Dvarim. Vayah im Shamoa is the end of that section in Sefer Dvarim. Mostly it has to do with what we call the mitzvot that deal with Avat Hashem, Yirat Hashem, all those mitzvot which are not, we'll call them the practical ma'asi mitzvot, rather mitzvot of machshava, leiv, how you have to approach Hashem, how you view Hashem, mitzvot, avat Hashem, yirat Hashem, velachta bidrachav, that you have to emulate Hashem. Those are the mitzvot that are found between Shema v'ayayim Shemoah. For the same reason, the Torah commands us to read Shema v'ayayim Shemoah every day, not only because of Shema and v'ayayim Shemoah, but because Shema and v'ayayim Shemoah bracket the fundamental mitzvot that you find in the Sefer Mitzvot Rambam. All the first 10 mitzvot that are there, they're all found between Shema and Vayayim Shemoah. So what it's telling you to do is read the, it's as if to read the beginning and the end, so that you remember everything that's in between. Not that you just do Shema Vayayim Shemoah. Rashi over here notes what the Gemara in Brachot says is Shema is Kabbalat Ol Malchut Shemaim, Vayayim Shemoah is Kabbalat Ol HaMitzvot. Aser Taser Ki Tichalel Aser. Then you read Aser Taser and Ki Tichalel Aser. Aser Taser, which speaks about the taking of the Tremot Masrot. Ki Tichalel Aser is in Parshat Ki Tavo, is the Vidui Maser of our Meiser Sheni that's found in Parshat Ki Tavo. Rashi says over here, the reason we do that is because it's Motzei Shvi'it. And it's the beginning of Chagasif, which is the time period in which you give Tremot and Masrot. That's what the Mishnah and Avot says. That Dever Bali Olam, and one of the time periods where it's difficult is around Sukkot, because people don't give the Matnot Aniyim, then they do it improperly. The truth is that this is Motzei Shvi'it, and in Motzei Shvi'it there isn't going to be so much Tumot and Masrot, because they can only have planted starting at Rosh Hashanah time. So there's not much here that they can have Tumot and Masrot from. Others indicate it's because it's post-Shemitah. During Shemitah, there's no chiyuv Tumot and Masrot. For Perot Shvi'it, don't require Tumot and Masrot to be removed from them. What it's saying here is reminding the people, now we're back to the regular schedule. It's time to remember about Tumot and Masrot, so that might be why we read it. In addition, we read Aser Taser and then skip to Ki Tichalel Aser. According to Rashi, is to keep them topically consistent. Since we're already on the topic of Maser, we read both of these, even though it's going to now make us out of order. Parshat HaMelech. Then you go backwards to Parshat HaMelech to read Parshat HaMelech. So that's what Rashi says. And then a brachot kolot. and then you read the Brachot Kolot, which is in Parshat Ki Tavo, Ad Shigomer Kol HaParsha, until you finish the entire Parsha. Question of where Brachot and Kolot exactly ends, not just at the, maybe at the end of Parshat Ki Tavo, but maybe even into Nitzavim, which talks about the Kiyum HaBrit of the Brachot and Kolot, and that's what Rashi says over here. You read the Parshat HaMelech, obviously, because the king is the one who is reading over here. Aseret Aser, we already explained. And now we read the Tochachot, which is the Brit, the covenant that is made over the mitzvot. So then Rashi asks your question, which is, what's going on over here? How is he allowed to roll around in the Torah? So Rashi says it, and it gives an interesting answer. He says, V'yimishom de'ishkan dilug b'Torah. You're skipping around in the Torah. B'chdei yafsik ha-turgman, ein ha-melech turgman. There is no turgman here. V'ein mitargamim acharav. So Rashi says something which almost seems counterintuitive. Before, we said that you can only skip around the amount of time it takes for the mitargim to finish. So Rashi says it's not a problem by the melech, because the melech doesn't have a mitargim. There is no mitargim by the king, and therefore you don't have that limitation. It seems counterintuitive. The only reason we let you roll while the mitargim is going is because there's sufficient time then not to bother the tzibur. Over here, there's no mitargim, so anything you roll is a problem for the tzibur, because there is no gapping. So Rashi says, well, that's it. It's outside the realm of this takana, and therefore you can roll it because there is no mitargim over here, so you can roll as much as you want. That's how Rashi describes it. That's how Rashi deals with the problem. Others deal with the problem by simply saying it's for the benefit of the tzibur, because we're staying topically consistent by skipping from Aser Taser to Kita Halel Aser. So it's for their benefit to do it that way. And therefore we go back to Parshat HaMelech, because if we did it the other way around, it would be confusing to them. So since it's for the benefit of the tzibur, that's the way we do it. Or in the end we say, Kavod HaMelech. That's the Kavod of the king, and the king is allowed to impose on the tzibur. Generally we say the Kavod HaTzibur are trumps, but over here, the Kavod HaMelech can trump the Kavod HaTzibur, and therefore the Melech can roll around and do it. In Rashi, he's inconsistent here. In one place he says, reads that Kikti Chalel Aser, and then you read Brachot Kolot, Umisham Chozer LaMafreya, and then he goes back and reads the Parshat HaMelech. So in one place Rashi seems to say you read Aser Taser, Kikti Chalel Aser, then you finish off Kidavo, which has the Brachot and Kolot in it, then you go back to Parshat HaMelech, which would be the closing piece. And another, later on in the Rashi, it seems like you read Aser Taser, Kikti Chalel, go back to Parshat HaMelech, and then go back to Brachot and Kolot, which are the closer, which would make the most sense, because you'd want to end off. The Brachot and Kolot are the covenant, and in some senses, Hakel is a reenactment of Har Sinai, of the reading of the Torah, and the covenant between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the people. And so you're doing that, ending off with the Brachot and Kolot and the Brit of Arvot Moav, makes a lot of sense here. Seems to be more likely the sequence that was done here. Again, the Rambam and the Perish of Mishnot, the Rambam also has a slightly different sequence than everyone else, where the Rambam here says that he reads Shema, then he goes skips the Parshat Vayim Shema, Ad Sofa Parsha, Umichaber Oto Parshat Aser Taser, and then he connects it into Aser Taser, V'Korel Aseder, Ad Sofa Brachot V'Klalot. And then he reads straight through until Parshat Kitavot Brachot V'Klalot, Shenemar Asher Karati Tam B'Chorev. So the Rambam avoids the whole problem by saying that they read straight through. From Parshat HaMelech onwards, they read straight, from Aser Taser onwards, they read the entire Torah. So within that would be captured Parshat HaMelech, Kiti Chalel Aser, and the Brachot and Kolot. So all of that would have been captured in there. So then you don't need any skipping around because you're reading the remainder of Sefer Dvarim in that case. So here, it's interesting. I just noted again as an aside. I don't want to get too deeply into it. The Girsa in our Mishnah is Motzei Yom Tov HaRishon Shel Chag. That it was on Motzei Yom Tov Rishon, which means after the first day of Sukkot. In the Gemara Yushalmi, the Nusach of the Mishnah is slightly different, which is Motzei Yom Tov HaAcharon. It's after the last day of Sukkot, after Shmini Atzeret, is when this took place. And from this, they want to derive the fact that Simchat Torah is not an invention of the Gola to deal with the fact that you have 2 days of Yom Tov on Shmini Atzeret, and you have to do something with the second day, you have to create something there, and therefore they ended the Torah there, and that was brought back to Eretz Yisrael, but rather it's a more kadum, it's a much more earlier institution that Simchat Torah, or the completion of the Torah took place, not necessarily every year, but every 7 years, or possibly what it was is 2 cycles. They had 2 cycles of 3.5 years, they weren't exactly equal, but those 2 cycles of 3.5 years, based on the documentation of the history of the way that they leaned in Eretz Yisrael, so they put together this idea that twice every 7 years they finished the Torah, and the second time they finished it came out on Motzei Chag HaSukkot, and that's why Simchat HaTorah was celebrated then. Obviously it doesn't fit according to our Mishnah, because our Mishnah is a Bavli Mishnah, but in the Yerushalmi, it's different because the laning in Eretz Yisrael was on a triannual cycle, versus in Bavel, where we had an annual cycle. That the Gemara already notes in Kiddushin, that there is that difference between an annual and a triannual cycle between us and Eretz Yisrael. And over here they say it wasn't exactly triannual, it was closer to 3.5. Again, it turns out it's not exactly even because it depends on the number of leap years that are in each section, as well as the Shabbatot in each year. But because of that, twice every 7 years, it would work out that you would finish the Torah based on the divisions that they have. And so that would then change this whole dynamic of Hakel, and Hakel also being not only getting the people together for this reenactment of Har Sinai, but also was a celebration of the completion of the Torah. And it was a significant event that took place, and that's why Simchat Torah commemorates that event. Could be on the 8th. Ema bishminit. Not on the 8th day, but shminit, the 8th year. Chohani lamali. And so this is what we mentioned in the Mishnah. What do I need all of these descriptors for? Because, trichik, diikat abrachmana miketz. If you told me at the end, havaminu nimnu mahashto. After 7 years, you do this. So you would think, count from today, 7 years, and then you'll know when to do it. Va'afagav dolo mitrame bishmita. Even though it's not coordinated with the shmita. So katav rachmana shmita. So that's why the Torah says that it's in the shmita. Vikat achrana shmita. If the Torah said shmita, I mean b'sof shmita, then I would have thought you did it in the shmita year itself at the end of the shmita. Katav rachmana b'moed. That you do it on a holiday. Ikatav rachmana b'moed. If you say on a holiday, havaminu reishato. You do it on Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is also a moed. Why do you have to wait until Sukkot? Therefore, katav rachmana b'chag Sukkot. To teach you that it's on Sukkot. If the Torah told you on Sukkot, havamina afilu yom tov achron. I would think even the last day of Sukkot, katav rachmana bevo kol Yisrael, matchalta de moed, from the beginning of the moed, meaning the beginning of Sukkot. The time that everybody comes up to Yerushalayim, when is that? That's on the first day of Sukkot. So therefore, it's one of the regalim, because that's when bevo kol Yisrael. So it's got to be one of the regalim, and then when is it before Kol Yisrael? It's the beginning of Sukkot. They're there at the end, but that's not when they come. They come at the beginning of Sukkot, and that's when it's done. It's done at the beginning of Sukkot. Tosfot over here points out that there's a problem, because once you've established this, the word b'moed is unnecessary. Once you have that it has to be miketz shevashanim, it has to be on Sukkot, so then you've solved all your problems where to do it. Why do you need the word moed anymore? From that, Tosfot concludes that the word b'moed teaches you that it's on the moed itself. Because Tosfot says, based on what the Torah says, you would do this on the first day of Sukkot. How come we wait to Motzei Yom Tov Rishon? Why do we wait till the post Yom Tov Rishon? Why don't we do it on Yom Tov Rishon itself? So Tosfot says, it can't be like what Rashi says. Rashi, on the next Amud, is going to say, the reason they don't do it on Yom Tov Rishon is because of the Bima Shalates. They had to put up this platform for the king to stand on or to sit on in order to read the Torah. And putting that up on Yom Tov would be inappropriate. It's not Doche Yom Tov to put it together on Yom Tov. So for that reason, they do it already on Chol HaMoed. Tosfot says that can't be the case. First of all, you would not be permitted to make it on Chol HaMoed. Just like you're not permitted to make it on Shabbat and Yom Tov, you also would not be able to make it on Chol HaMoed because you could do it beforehand. You could do it before Yom Tov, so it's not a Dover Aved. It's not something that is necessary to do on Chol HaMoed. The Gemara is going to ask, why not just put it in place before Yom Tov, leave it there, and then they'll use it afterwards. So the Gemara says, because you need the space. Duchah d'Azara. It's going to cramp the space in the Azara. There's so many people there on Yom Tov to bring Korbanot and to be there for the Avodah on Yom Tov that it would be problematic. So Tosfot comes up with the solution, says that's not a problem. What they do is, they built it before Yom Tov, and then they broke it into sections. They took the sections out. So then, when they're ready to do it, they bring the sections together and put it together in Chol HaMoed. So it's not Mekaveh Melachto. But his main issue with Rashi is, this is a mitzvah d'oraita. If the mitzvah d'oraita is to do it on Yom Tov Rishon, for a problem of Bima Shalates, you're not going to do it on Yom Tov Rishon? That seems incomprehensible. How could you be docha a mitzvah d'oraita Because the Bima Shalitz, which is not a din d'oraita, there's no din in the Torah that says you have to build the Bima Shalitz so the kohen to be on a platform and to be able to speak to the people. There's no requirement like that in the Torah. If that's the case, then why should that be doche? So what Tosfot says in the end is the word bimoed teaches you not on the moed, but bimoed, in the moed, that it's done on chol moed. And from that, it's the limud mi d'oraita that it's not done on Yom Tov Rishon, but rather in the moed, meaning on chol moed of that time period. So now, Gemara says, the Chazan HaKnesset notil Sefer Torah, notil the Rosh HaKnesset. Shema mina, the Gemara wants to conclude the same thing it did in the previous Mishnah, chokim kavod l'tamid b'makom erav, that you give kavod to the person of a lesser stature, even in the face of the person that's there of a higher stature. Over here, they're giving kavod to the skan, they're giving kavod to the Kohen Gadol, despite the fact that the Melech is there who is of the highest stature. Amar Abaye answers the same thing he did before, which is kula mishum kvodo de Melech. All of this is done in order to increase the kavod to the king. The more people that touch it and pass it shows that this is all done for the benefit of the king. It's not to give kavod to the skan or to the kohen gadol. It's to give kavod to the melech, that each of these individuals takes the Torah and passes it to the king, shows how great the king is or how high the stature of the king is. V'melech umeid umikabel v'korei yoshev. Gripes ha-melech amad v'kibel v'kara umeid. Umeid nechal v'yoshev. He's standing now means that he was sitting prior to this. The only people that are allowed to sit in the Azara are those who are the descendants of Beit David. Agrippus HaMelech. Now Rashi on the Mishnah says this is Agrippus HaMelech in whose time the Churban HaBayit took place. The problem with that is that that's really Agrippus II, who was the son of Agrippus I. There were two Agrippuses. Agrippus II is the king at the time of the Churban. Actually, he passes away, and then the Churban takes place. The Agrippus HaMelech here could be the Agrippus I, who was the grandson of Herod, and it's not clear why Rashi knows that he is the Agrippus II. But there are a number of stories about the Agrippus HaMelech, and in general, that Agrippus HaMelech tried to endear himself to the people. And that comes from the tension that was created with Herod, Hurdus, and the Chachamim, because Hurdus has, based on the Gemara, really usurped the power. Since we're coming up into Chanukah, the Chashmoneim take over as the kings after they defeat the Yevanim. Chashmoneim is taking over the kings. Chashmoneim are clearly Kohanim, and they are not from Machut Beit David, because otherwise they wouldn't be Kohanim. So they take over as the rulership. The Ramban is extremely critical of them for that reason, and says the reason that the Chashmoneim dynasty ended in such disaster is because of that they violated the Isur for the king to be from someone other than Malchut Beit David. It's clear because it creates a separation of powers. You don't want the Kohen Gadol to be the king, and you don't want the king to be the Kohen Gadol. You want to separate the job of the king from the job of the Kohen Gadol, both because it takes a different skill set and involves a different perspective on terms of Kedusha and what they're involved in, but also to separate the powers so that no one holds too much power within them to be both Kohen Gadol and to be the king. So for that reason, the Chashmoneim dynasty ends in disaster. That disaster is provided by the Chachamim, is Hurdus, is Herod. Herod, who is a servant of Beit Chashmoneim, kills out all of his masters and then takes over as the king. So Agrippus, who is a grandchild of Hurdus, is first of all clearly not from Malchut Beit David. And number two is probably not even from the Chashmoneim dynasty, because they were servants of the house of Chashmoneim. Shneamar, because it says Vayom Melech David Vayishiv Bifnei Hashem Vayomer. So Melech David can sit down. So again, the Gemara gives the answer. Amar Rav Chista Bezrat Nashim, Achanami Bezrat Nashim, was in the Ezrat Nashim. So even though Agrippus was not a king from the lineage of Beit David, he could sit down because it wasn't in the Ezra itself. It was in the Ezrat Nashim. Shabchua Chachamim, Chachamim praised him for this. Shabchua Michal de Shapir Avad, that he did a good thing. Amar Rav Ashi Avilu Mandamar Nasi Shemachal Kvodo Kvodo Machul. Even though a nasi, who is owed a certain amount of reverence, he's allowed to be mochel on that reverence, just like a parent can be mochel on kvodam to their children. So too, a nasi can do that. So too can a talmid chacham. All these individuals, even though they're due a certain amount of reverence because of their stature, they can waive that and act in a manner that does not demand that kavod. Nevertheless, melech shemachal kvodo ein mekvodo machol. Who comes to a king, he's not allowed to waive that. And that is because of the protection of the institution of king. The institution of the king is important that the people have reverence towards the institution itself, not just to this particular individual. If the king waives the need for a kavod in these instances, he's going to diminish the position or institution of the king. So because of that, the king does not have a right on his own to waive the need for reverence to the king. In order to preserve the institution, that the fear of the king should be on the people, you need to make sure that he never gives up on that need for reverence. Gemara says, mitzvah shiny. When it comes to a mitzvah, it is different. What exactly that means, Tosfot over here asks from other places in Shas, why we don't invoke this principle of mitzvah shiny. Because we find that kings sometimes did things that Gemara is questioning their behavior, like a Gubipis HaMelech, because there was a procession of a Kala coming, he changed routes in order to give reverence or deference to the Kala. But that means that he waived his Kavod. And the Gemara over there doesn't say mitzvah shiny, taking care of the Kala or being Mesamech the Kala. Why don't we say that that's a mitzvah and therefore he was allowed to do it? The Gemara doesn't bring that up. The Gemara says it was Parshat Drachim. It was a fork in the road and he had a choice which way to go. So it didn't look like he was waving his Kavod by going the other way because it was a fork in the road and he let the Kala go through. But why don't they answer mitzvah shiny? So Tosfot gives you the principle. But here let the rates. The Dafka Acha Shaykh the Memer Mitzvah Shiny, the Mochela Kvodo Mishum Kvoda Torah, Shu Kvoda Shechina. The only time the king is allowed to wave his Kvod with Makom Mitzvah is the Mitzvah involves Kvod Shemayim, or Kvod Shechina, Kvoda Torah. Because in that sense, the king is showing the proper behavior for the king, that he subjugates himself to Hashem. And that's okay. So therefore, Mochela Kvodo Kedei Lekayim Mitzvah Melech Olamim, that he waves his kavod in order to perform the mitzvah of the greatest king, that of God, and through that he shows that the ema of HaKadosh Baruch was on him, then that's when a mitzvah is shiny. But to do a mitzvah for the kala, where there the deference or the reverence is being given to a human being, even though it might involve a mitzvah, but the sum total of that mitzvah is that you're now treating the kala better than the king, that he can't do. So there are, mitzvah shiny is not an all-encompassing solution to the problem of the king waving his kavod. He only is allowed to wave his kavod with mitzvah shiny when that kavod, waving of kavod involves giving kavod to God and showing that God is above the king. Because that is proper, and that's exactly what Parshat HaMelech says, that the king has to subjugate himself to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. So that's actually part and parcel of the institution of the king, is that he does show that deference or reverence to God. Yuxia lo tuchal latet. So when they reached the point where they read that you're not allowed to have a foreigner be a king over you, Tana Mishmei de Rabbi Natan, Botosha, Nitchaylu Sunei Yisrael Kloya, that on that moment, Bnei Yisrael were deserving of destruction. Sunei Yisrael is a euphemism, because they didn't want to say Bnei Yisrael deserving of destruction. Shechechnifu lo de Agrippus, because they were flattering Agrippus, which was wrong.
Or really, the word that should be used here is that they were obsequious, more along the lines of this type of servile fawning, which is much more negative than the word flattery.
What was the problem here? Rashi already notes it on the Mishnah and says that Imo Yisrael, his mother was Jewish. Since his mother was Jewish, they answered him and said, okay, even though you may not be Jewish, again, as a descendant of Herod, he was a servant of the Hashmoneic dynasty. And because of that, when he rose up, he clearly is not a Jew that is rising up and taking over. And Agrippus, being a descendant of Herod, a grandchild of Herod, was clearly not Jewish. But, so if that's what happened here, he had a mother that was Jewish. The kings married Israel. It was definitely an issue, by the way, for the kings of that time, which was that they were part of the Roman aristocracy. And therefore, they actually many times were marrying non-Jewish women, and their families almost were completely non-Jewish. So here, if he married a Jewish woman, Rabbi mother was Jewish, and therefore he was considered to be Jewish. That's what Rashi says on the Mishnah, which indicates that when they answered him, Achinu Atah, you really are a brother, they were answering him, Rashi is describing over here, that it was okay, it was fine. The problem with that is, then why is the Gemara criticizing it over here and saying that they were wrong and telling him that it was okay?
Rashi claims that the issue was zila milta, that it was unbecoming or inappropriate that he was the king, but not necessarily that there was any isur.
So now Tosfot here criticizes that view of Rashi. So we saw this machloket Tosfot and Rashi in Yevamot. The Rashi says, "Som tasim alecha melech." The Gemara there says, "Echosh simot shata misim Any position of power where you appoint someone to be in a position of power or authority, they must be from amongst you, must be from your brethren. The Gemara over there discusses cases of Moraim appointing people who were Geirim or came, were descendants of Geirim, and into positions of authority. The Gemara, their answer is that his mother was from Israel and therefore was okay. As long as the mother was Jewish, even though the father was a Ger, that child is considered to be Som Tasim Alecha Mecha Mikerav Achecha. That from amongst your brethren, you are allowed to appoint them, and that's good enough. What Tosfot here says is that when the Gemara says that, that's only true for positions of authority besides the king. By the king, there's an additional demand that both parents be Mi'Israel. And that's what the problem was over here, and that's what Tosfot says, that Agrippa Zamelech, even if his mother was Jewish, that wasn't sufficient grounds to allow him to be the king, even though it's sufficient grounds in other instances to put a person into a position of authority. And that's why over here, when the Chachamim said, oh, you really are brother, you really are brother, that's why it was a patronizing of Agrippus that was incorrect. And because they did that, they were deserving of destruction or punishment. So, Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta, miyom shegavar Agrippa shel Chanufa. It's a nice play on the words here. From the moment that, as Rashi says, Agrippa is kocho, is the strength, like a fist, which you hit with or you punch with, is when the strength of this flattering behavior took over, nit avtu, whether it's hadinim or dayanim, nit kalkulu amasim, ven adam yechol omar lechavero, masai gdolim mima'asecha. Basically, you lost any sense of right or wrong, any sense of moral standing. And that is because the dayanim, as Rashi says, if they are complimenting, whether it's the people or the balei din, then they can come to adjudicate a proper solution or proper outcome, because they're afraid of other parties, whether again it's the balei dinim or it's the people that appoint them, that they're worried about. And in itkaklu amasim, that the gdolim see people that are violating aveirot, and yet they don't chastise them, they don't give them musar, instead they compliment them. And from that, others learn that this type of behavior is considered to be good and acceptable. And that's what the last statement is, that nobody can say anymore that our deeds are good, because everybody's learning from the others that it's okay to behave this way and it's okay to conduct oneself. So there's a dangerous downward slope when people are patronizing when things are wrong. Now, Gemara is referencing this to Agrippus. I think that was the play on the word Agrippa. It's an interesting on Agrippus. But the Chachamim were afraid of Agrippus. Because they're afraid of Agrippus, they tell him, Achinu ata, Achinu ata, even though he was inappropriate to be the king. So what should they have done? Of course they can't say anything. And that we know is an exception to the rule, as Tosfot brings here by the case of Ula, that b'makom sakana, if you're in life's in danger, then to patronize is okay because it's saving your life. Nothing is omid before bikuach nefesh. So of course they can't say to him, you don't belong as the king. They're going to kill him if they do that. But what they shouldn't have done was answered in the affirmative, which is achinu ata. They should have just remained silent. Let him cry, and that's it. The fact that they tried to placate him and say achinu ata, that already was a step too far that they shouldn't have done. It wasn't necessary, and that's why they're being criticized for it. Darash Rabbi Yehuda bar Marava, v'itayma Rabbi Shimon Pazi. So Rabbi Yehuda, whether bar Marava means literally is the son of Marava, or bar Marava means the Rabbi Yehuda of the West that came from Eretz Yisrael. V'itayma Rabbi Shimon Pazi, mutar lachnif l'rishayim b'olam hazeh. You're allowed to compliment Rishayim in this world. Shinamar, lo yikare ol denaval nadif. No longer will the Naval, the one who is disgusting, deplorable, be called a Nadiv, a donor. And to those that are destructive and engage in destructive behavior, it's interesting, Rashi over here says, they're drunkards, which is like this self-destructive behavior. Lo yomer shoah will not say, it's okay. Michlau, the balam hazeh, shori. Because it says, lo yikareh od means in the future. In the future, this will not be the case. But means that now, in this world or in our situation, you're allowed to do it. You can learn it from this. By the case when Yaakov meets Esav, he says, kirot bnei elukim batirtzeini. He says about his brother, it's as if I saw the face of God and so pleasing. So he calls Esav as if he's seeing the face of God. That's flattery or false compliment. Upligid Rabbi Levi. And that argues on Rabbi Levi, Damar Levi Levi, Mashal, Shel Yaakov, Ve'esav, Dama, Hadavar, Domeh. Why did Yaakov speak in such a way towards Esav? Demela Adam shezimenet chavero v'ikibo shemekavesh lohorgo. It's a case where a person invites over a friend, and he knows the guy has intentions to kill him. Amlo, tamtav shil zesh anito aim, says, this dish that we're eating now, ketav shil shetamti b'beit ha-melech. Very similar to the dish I had when I was at the king's table. So why does he say that? Amar yadale the malka? This guy, the king knows him, he's friendly with the king. Mistafe velo katule. He's too embarrassed or too scared, and he won't kill him. Basically, what he's doing is dropping names, because he knows the guy intends to kill him, and he can kill him. But if he drops the name of the king, all of a sudden this guy does a double take and says, wait a minute, this guy's friendly with the king. If I kill him, the king's going to know about it, he's going to come after me. So maybe I better think twice about it. So the same thing over here by the case of Yaakov and Esav. Yaakov is afraid of Esav. So what does he say to him that Kirot Pnei Elukim? I'm seeing you as like seeing the face of God or the face of the Malachim. He's implying to him that he normally sees Malachim, or he normally interacts with Elukim. If that's the case, then it's to engender a certain amount of fear in Esav not to kill Yaakov, because Yaakov has this relationship with the Malachim. And that's what he was trying to do. Amar Rav Elazar, kol adam sheyesh bo chanufa mevi af deolam. Anybody who has this type of kol adam sheyesh bo chanufa, any person who gives this type of flattery, or mevi af deolam, he brings anger to the world. Shenemar b'chan chev leiv yisimu af. Those that are of this nature of this flattery, they cause anger to come about. Vlo'od, el she'en tfilato nishmat. That a person acts this way, then their prayers are not heard. Shnemar, lo yishav'u ki asaram. They will no longer be heard or accepted ki asaram, because they are locked up, or rather, as she says over here, asaram means when the isurim, that when difficulties befall them, then Hashem will not listen or will not help them out. Because they, again, this flattery causes a lot of mistakes or problems to come about. Because the flattery where you're attempting to accomplish something or get something for yourself, on the other hand, it has a serious detrimental impact, which is then people think that what this person is doing is correct, even though it is improper. But even if it works, Shem is saying it's not going to work, because in the long run, you're going to pay a price for it. So here you see an interesting machloket between the Amoraim as to whether flattery b'olam hazeh is good or bad. In one sense, they say it's good, based on the Mishnah in Avot, that you shouldn't tangle with a Rasha b'makom she'Hashem sacheket lo, when things are going well from him. When he's ascendant, when he's on the rise, don't tangle with him, because he's going to win. So you may as well do Chanifa, because otherwise you're going to end yourself in a difficult position. On the other hand, there are Amoraim who say that you can't benefit yourself in that manner because of the negative side effects that come about from this, that this type of flattery is going to lead others to believe that this behavior is okay. And in doing so, you're basically condoning the behavior of the Rasha. And that we don't want to happen. You can gain something from someone in power, whether it's a politician, it's a king, it's a president. Should you be mechnifah him because it gets you the short-term goal? That's one set of Amoraim here say, yes, that's the way that you accomplish it. That's the way you get it. So you have to do it. The other set of Amoraim say that that's not the proper behavior, because there's a high cost to doing it in this way, and we're going to look negatively on it. The other possibility is maybe they're both right, and it depends on the circumstance. Are you just flattering to gain yourself personal gain there? Or you're flattering in a sense to help all of Klal Yisrael in that instance? And maybe over there there's a dispensation. You could say that it depends on the circumstance, whether it's appropriate or not appropriate. V'am Rav Elazar, kol adam sheyesh bo chanufa, afilu ubrim shebemei iman mikalin oto. Someone who has this type of behavior, even the fetuses in their mother's wombs curse him. Shenemar, omer le rasha tzadik ata. The one who says to the rasha, you are a tzadik. Yikvuhu amim izamuhu le'umim. So that we have by Bilam. When he goes to try to curse Bnei Yisrael, and comes back to Balak, he says that what you want me to curse, kabakel, and that what you had, lo zalamo, that God didn't get angry and doesn't curse these individuals. So what it's saying here is the one who calls the Rasha Tzaddik, then he should be cursed, and they should be angry at him. Vein kov ele klala, and kov is a nashon klala, shenemar lo kabokel. That is the lashon found by Bilam. Vein le'om ele ubarim, and le'om, the word le'om or le'umim, is an ubar, shenemar ule'om mil'om yamatz. In the information that's given to Rivka about Yaakov and Esav, it says le'om mil'om yamatz. that the younger nation, the smaller nation, will be greater. But there he's talking about two fetuses, meaning Yaakov and Esav, that are in her womb. Anybody who has this chanufa ends up in Gehinom. Shinemar, hoi, homrim la ratov. Woe to those that say bad is good. Well, the tov ra, they call good bad. Maktiv acharav. What's written right after this? Lachain, techo kash, lashonesh. The same way that a tongue of fire, or a stream of fire eats up the straw. Bechashash lehava, your peh. And the flame will destroy the stubble, or the dry grass. So over here again, you have a similar idea that the fires of Gehinom will catch this person. He will become fuel for the fires of Gehinom because he acts in this manner, which makes Ra into Tov and Tov into Ra. Okay, we'll stop here on the bottom of Mem Aleph Bet, 3 lines from the bottom.